Blog Talk Radio.
Mariam, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I am so sorry. You know, Blog Talk Radio lately has been terrible with the sound and with the invitations as well. I'm sorry that this has happened, and I'm going to report it to the Blog Talk Radio administrators. But Mariam, can you introduce yourself to the audience more and maybe talk more about the film that occurred and also the book that's coming out?
Oh, yes, I am Mariam Jacobs. I've been on Leon multiple times. I live in the Netherlands. I work in my country with incarcerated people on a voluntary base. I have studied philosophy and graduated for my master. I wrote a book about the United States prison system because I didn't research to what is really going wrong in there. And I tried to dive into structures which lie beneath the system and are out of balance. And I compared these structures with the structures that I could find beneath the concentration camps in World War II. The book is going to be going to be published this month. So I found a publisher, and it's already designed, and now it's going to be published. And in the beginning of next year, I hope it will be translated into English, because I also want people from the United States being able to read it. I participated in a film. The film is called Death Row Angels, but that's a completely different story from my book. So both are different items. The film is about European women who communicate with men on death row in the United States, why they do that, and why they support the men in prison. So yes, and that film is on Amazon Prime. It has been released 2 weeks ago, and it's now on Amazon Prime for the next 5 years for people to watch it when they want to.
So all we need to do is to go to Amazon Prime YouTube. Would it be on YouTube?
No, it's on Amazon itself.
Okay, and the name of it is Death Row Angels.
Yeah, the title of the film is Death Row Angels.
Okay, I've got to see it. And I also wanted to ask you if you can, to let the audience know about the book, the title of the book, and you said it would be coming out the beginning of the year in English?
Well, no, it will be published in Dutch, in my own language, this month. And in January, I want to talk with my publisher for a translation into English. But,
okay.
You know, I want to take one step at a time, because I was very happy that I could find a publisher, because it's very difficult these days to publish a book. There are so many people who want to do that. So publishers are very careful who they say yes to or no. A lot of manuscripts are rejected by publishers. So I was lucky to find one, yeah.
I was going to say, your book is scholarly. I mean, I've written some books, but my books, I pay to have them published, and a lot of people do. And so when publishers come to you, as they did with your book, it shows it's a scholarly book, and it's difficult for any of us to have published, and unless it's something that's really, you know, it's really interesting and it's really scholarly. But a lot of people are aware of you now, Mariam, and you're becoming well known to a lot of people around the country and parts of the world. And this is why I wanted to let the audience know, this is why this book is so important, because you've been so involved in what's going on in the penal system in this country and around the world. And as you bring up so many times, the differences between mass incarceration in the United States and other countries, and the maximum that most countries have is 25 years, and the way that they operate their penal system is much different than ours. So a lot of people are becoming aware of you because you not only have been in American prisons, but you also volunteer in a prison in the Netherlands. So you've been doing a lot of extensive work and research, and this is something that makes you so special. And this is why it's such an honor to have you coming on periodically to talk about these things.
Yeah, thank you, Leona. Yeah, what I really emphasize in my book is the importance of start a discussion about human values, because I think that discussion is missing a lot of times. So my book is very small. It's no more than about 90 pages, but it's to the point, because I can talk a whole lot about the influence of corporal power. I can talk a lot about racism and all these issues, but there has already been written a lot about these issues, and we know that it's there. So what I wanted to do is try to look behind racism, try to look behind these corporal powers and other influences to to deep align structures, and then I come to human values, and that's I think the biggest problem. So, you know, we see a lot of protests from time to time about gun violence, about racism, about all these issues, but I think what I miss in all these discussions is an emphasis on human values. What we do now is we put a monetary value on life, so we measure life with money, and so human values are really threatened. And in fact, the title of my book, when I translate it into English, then it is suspended human values in camp, concentration camp, and prison. Because if you look at the suspension of human values, and that's what's happening in your country when we look at mass incarceration, it's the same as the suspension of human values that happened with the Jewish people in World War II. That's the underlying issue. And I think it's very, very, very urgent that there will be much more discussion about restoration of the human values, because I think negotiation on human values should never ever happen, and that is what's happening. We try to make money out of incarceration, and well, I think when people do that, then we cross divine lines, because life is divine. And so we cross that line, and that's why there is so much destruction going on right now, because that's what we do.
You know, you mentioned also in your book talking about women from other countries that are involved with incarcerated individuals in this country. I don't know if you know, but not too long ago, there was a female correctional officer in this country who fell in love with the prisoner, and she actually helped him to escape. Unfortunately, the individual was caught, and she ended up committing suicide because she knew, I guess, that she would be really in a lot of trouble and going to prison herself by helping him. But it's the reason I bring this up is it's so important for people to understand that the incarcerated individuals in this country, there's many wrongfully convicted, and there's many victims before becoming offender. There's many first-time offenders. They're all serving life and life without parole. And people stereotype, and I always emphasize that prisoners should not be stereotyped, because there's such a difference in a lot of the prisoners. If people, as you say, with deeper justice, if people really dig deep into the situations that led to incarceration. But I often think about that female prisoner, that female prison guard who helped her loved one. to escape because it was a sad situation that
yeah,
had to
be. Yeah, but I think you see some issues coming together in that, because this is not what I mentioned in the book, but that's what I'm about. I also became a victim of somebody in Florida who had a life sentence. And at the time, I was very naive. I didn't know anything about incarceration, prisoners, prisons. I didn't know anything about it. So I ruled very naively. I got into the situation that I got involved with this man. When you mentioned this example of this female, he would have been in love with this man, and he would have really loved if he would really have been in love with her, then she would have tried to transfer to another prison and they would maintain their relationship. But, you know, he has abused her, of course, for his own gain. And that's what my prisoner in Florida did with me, because he needed money. And the thing is, in prison, there are the same people, you know, the prisoners are people like we are. And on the streets, you have good people and you have bad people. That's the same in prison. I mean, there's no difference. They are not another species. They are the same species as we are. But another thing is, incarceration is damaging people. So, you know, when you get incarcerated for so long, most of the times people get worse. They already had issues before they committed the crime. Then the crime is committed. Then they end up in the prison system. And they, instead of healing and restoring the damage that they have in their soul, incarceration brings more damage into them. So they become worse. And in that you see that there is no rehabilitation. You know, they talk about rehabilitation and rehabilitation programs, but that's only for the public. There might be some good programs, but it's not a real change of policy. There's no change in policy. And in the film, there are some women who say that the system is broken, and you see protests because they say the prison system is broken. But I think it depends on the perspective, because if you look at corporal power, then from their perspective, mass incarceration functions very well. The system does what it has to do. It makes money for the corporations and the very rich and wealthy ones. So it is broken from our perspective, but it's not broken for very rich parties who make money out of it.
There have been advocates from Florida and other states that have been talking about sometime in 2023 to start a movement where they will not buy from a lot of these corporations. Someone had sent me a listing of all the corporations that are invested in the prisons and those that are contracted with the Department of Corrections around the country. And so there are some advocates that want to do a movement where for at least a month to stop buying from any of these corporations, like McDonald's and Starbucks and Sprint, cellular, and a lot of these others. But some prisoners are also saying, rather than stop buying from them, to try to work with them, to try to have them do something positive for the prisoners instead of working against the prisoners by investing in them. And this is something that might work. I don't know. It's something that I think should be considered as well. But I don't know what your thoughts would be on something like that.
I think the initiative is well meant, and of course the a voice against the more voices against the system, I think, and protest against the system is good. But I think real change starts with a change of mindset, and then you have to start with another perspective on people who have committed a crime. You know, so that's a very deep, that's changing on a deeper level. Stop these biases, look into the human being who has committed a crime, make a distinction between the human being and the crime. the crime is a part of that person, but he is not, you know, he is not equal to the crime. Try to rehabilitate, but I think the first start is be aware of the fact that there are human values suspended in the system. So I think a counter voice, you know, that you protest against, I think that's needed, but it's not enough. There's more needed. A change of mindset, also a change of mindset for police officers, guards in training. Train them more psychology. Train them more psychological problems, trauma, and all that. So there is so much needed, and it goes back to a deeper level, because I think the prison system is also a reflection of, you know, what people think about each other in society. Why do you have mass incarceration, and why do we not have mass incarceration? What's the difference? Because we have another society. We are not that judging, and we are not that full of biases. I mean, I don't say that my country is paradise. We also have our own issues, but they are not those issues. Mm-hmm. I don't, when you look at all these shootings now again, 2 weeks ago, two shootings that came in the Dutch news. You have a lot of more mass shootings, but you know, now you have had two mass shootings that came into the Dutch news. And when I look at the comments from people, they hardly comment anymore because they are used to it. They say, well, that's United States. They are violent. And that's where it starts, you know. It's not, you have to understand that, not yourself, but a lot of people, they point at the violence of criminal people, you know, who commit a crime. But I think the whole society is violent, because that's why you all need these guns, and you glorify this violence and these guns, and you know, so
you know,
you
just mentioned something about, like they say, they do it in the United States. When I was in Ghana, West Africa, years ago, these young kids were out there using all kinds of vulgar languages. You know, they were trying to act like the young people in the United States, and I was asking them why. Why are you using that kind of language? And that's when they said they do it in the United States. People in other countries, the young people, they want to be so much like the young people in the United States. And we should be showing them a positive example. It's like the kids, the young people in the United States that have no role models. There's no role models out there for them anymore. So they're out there doing all these crazy things, not because it's something that's fun, but it's something that it's the only way of survival, because they reach out to others like them who are going through the same situation, the same pain and suffering. And so they connect with one another. And before you know it, there's gangs and there's violence. And this is expanding out of this country to the young people in other countries that see all this in the United States. And it's pitiful. You know, it's the violence. I just realized, I was watching the news the other day, and I just learned that they, at one of the prisons in Massachusetts, Susan Baranowski, one of the higher security prisons, they just started having them wear body cameras. They said that they're hoping with the body cameras, it's going to bring a little connection between the individuals incarcerated and the prison correctional officers and officials. I'm hoping that these body cameras will help, but I have little confidence in our prison system and our overseers.
We also talked about body cams a long time ago when we talked about this sexual abuse in the lower prison, you know, the female prison in Florida. It was, I think, last year or something, or 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And what I thought about is, you know, body cams are needed, but it's not the whole solution, because you have to look at, why do we need body cams? We need body cams because there is so much violence, and there is no oversight in these violence. There is no control on these violence. But behind that lies a question for me. Why do guards need all that violence? What why do they have this mindset that they, you know, want to use all this violence on criminals, on prisoners? So the lies are world, you know, the need for body cams is not a solution, but it's an outcome of a problem that lies beneath the violence. So, and then you come to the mindset. So, you know, it's important to try to solve problems on the surface, but it's also important to look at what's happening beyond these problems. Why are many guards so violent? Why do they look down on prisoners? Why do they treat prisoners like, less than animals? What's that coming from? Why is this need to do so? What is this need? I would like to ask guards, what is your need to treat incarcerated people as less than animals? Why do you not want to rehabilitate them? Why don't you want to talk to them and ask them who they are and how they came to this crime, what happened? And that's, you know, so a lot of attention goes to problems on the surface and trying to solve them. But if you don't look at the mindset beyond that, and nothing is really going to change, then you are only trying to repair on the surface. I think both are needed. And looking further than the surface, it should be done much more. There's too less of that. It's only focusing on the surface, trying to, you know, have these solutions, these quick solutions. It's very easy, you know, to use body cams. But if a guard carries a body cam, but he still has this mindset that a prisoner is less than human, and that he, you know, maintain stepping over these human values, then in fact nothing is changing. You see, and that is a discussion that I miss in when it comes to all these issues about mass incarceration. These questions are not really asked enough.
And another thing that I'd like to know is with the legislative members, our government, leaders, our lawmakers, and even the parole, I know that there's been advocates talking about, and I believe there is an advocacy group or whatever, talking about parole reform, because parole consists of law, and there needs to be more people independent outside of law that's on the parole board. But one of the things that I find is legislative members, that, I mean, they're talking about criminal justice reform and prison reform. But one of the things that's never brought up is the fact that there are many incarcerated individuals, as you mentioned with the rehabilitation, there are many incarcerated individuals who have been denied over and over again any kind of participation in any kind of programs, educational programs, work programs. You know, these are the things that they're deprived of. There are a lot of people that are receiving magazines and books from retailers. A lot of times they don't get their books, their magazines, their mail is tampered with and destroyed. And I'd like to know your thoughts on how our legislative members should be managing or controlling or at least getting more involved in trying to help these people that are being deprived of all of these programs.
Yeah, but I think it would be good when you talk about legislators, I think it would be good to ask them, explain me why you act now the way you act. Why is there so much deprivation of all this, what you now say? I first would want to ask, tell me, explain to me why you are doing it this way. Let them talk. Why? What do you think about why you have mass incarceration? Because, you know, the solutions are all well known. There are even people from the Norway prison, the Halden prison, that's the model prison for the whole world. They have visited the United States. They have given advice to the United States. People from the United States have been in Norway. They've seen the prison. They see the evidence that it helps, that people get rehabilitated, that the community is safe. You know, you can walk there in the middle of nowhere and nothing happens. So in the United States, they know what's happening in Norway. They know it's much better. It's not new. It's not a surprise. So my question would be, okay, you have all this information. You have been in Norway. You have seen it. You have seen evidence, reports that say recidivism is very low. So it helps. It works to do it the way that Norway does it. So I would ask, with all this information, explain to me, please, why you still have mass incarceration. And then I would like to hear the answer. And then you get a complete different answer. Because Norway is, the difference is Norway is prepared to invest capital, financial capital, in that system. Because a prison system like that costs money and costs tax money. That's, so the people of Norway and the legislators of Norway all together, they choose that system and they are prepared to invest in that because they see the prisoners in the system as their fellow human beings who have to become restored in order to become safe for the community, but also because they are human beings who deserve a true second chance. And what you see in the United States is they don't want to invest money. No, they earn money from it. It's the opposite. So in Norway, it costs a lot of money. And in the United States, they earn a lot of money because it's a $1 million industry. You see, and that's the big difference. That's why you can, well, it doesn't matter how many people from the United States are going to visit Norway. They simply don't make the choice because they don't want to invest in their own people. Look what Biden now does. All these billions of dollars going to Ukraine to keep this war going, because in fact it's a war between the U.S., United States and Russia fought in Ukraine. But it's not a war between Ukraine and Russia. So it's in fact a war between the United States and Russia. And all this money that could have been used for the roads, for the traffic, for building up the country, for investment in human beings, you know, United States citizens, instead of investing in their own people, they choose to bring that money to Ukraine because they like war. The United States loves war. It's a warlike country. How many wars have you fought? How many countries have been devastated by the United States? You know, it's so sad, but that's also a reason why you have mass incarceration, simply because the people who should matter, the key figures with the power, with the money, they don't care. They don't care about their people. They only care about their own bank accounts. And that's the whole problem. In a nutshell, that's the real English word. And that's the problem. Yeah. They know how it works in Norway and in Europe. They know. In the United States, all the information is well known. And still you have mass incarceration because it's, you know, it's good money. And then, you know, then you get to these human values. The citizens of the United States and all the states, they should really wake up. They have to wake up and think, hey, it's not only the incarcerated people, it's all the people whose human values are suspended. You have beautiful, you have beautiful amendments that should protect human values, but you can't reach them. Look at, you know, my loved one in Massachusetts prison. He cannot reach his own rights. He can't.
No. So much.
Russia seems. Yeah.
So much. You know, I noticed too in Massachusetts, and I'm sure in other states, what happens is when people reach out to our politicians for help they can't get from elsewhere, they seem to, for some reason, they make a few calls here and there. And they don't get anything accomplished, but they can at least say, well, we made a call and they said they were going to check into it. Or they find that the people that they're calling are lying to them and nothing gets done. So how, and sometimes they even refer the people calling in for that, reaching out to them for help, they refer them to the very same organizations and groups that the people calling them about, you know, the individual that has already tried. You know, we have an, I have an organization, and I've reached out to the legislative members to help prisoners, and they've caught the prison officials in lies. And yet that's as far as it goes. And sometimes they'll refer the very person or people that we're reaching out to them to help, they'll refer them right back to the very people we've already tried to get help from. You know, it's not as though we're reaching out to the legislative members for the first time for help for an individual. We're reaching out to them as a last resort. And unfortunately, that last resort turns out that they have just as little control or as little influence as we do with these organizations. I find very much needed. Oversight is very much needed in a lot of these organizations, a lot of these prisons, the penal system. They need to have oversight. And as you mentioned, the money. Invest the money in your country with the people that are in need of eliminating this mass incarceration, because this is a major problem. They release a few here and there, but they're putting 10 times more back in.
Yeah, but it's only a problem for the incarcerated people and their families. It's not a problem for powers that make money out of it. And that's the whole thing. And that's why people should, you know, wake up en masse and really start to protest, because they are a very huge power, but they are divided themselves. You know, you have these racial problems, you have poverty problems, you know, people, there are also communities who are so poor they cannot reach healthcare, decent education, you name it, you know. You have areas in your country that those are like third world countries. So these people don't have the energy to protest against, you know, the suspension of their rights taken away, because they have to survive. And that's where rich parties count on. For as long as the citizens are divided, they will not become a unity and protest. If they would do that, they would be a very big, you know, force. But what, you look now at what Biden is doing with all this money going, you know, to all these weapons to Ukraine. The United States delivers the most weapons and the most the highest amount of money. Why? All that money is going to a country. What's Ukraine for the United States? It's far away. You know, there is no president and who chooses for its own people. He should invest all this money in his own country, in the United States. Make basic needs accessible for everyone, like healthcare, food, decent housing. You know, so people don't need to worry anymore, and they can develop themselves and become a higher developed community altogether. A lot of people in your country are in a survival mode.
And I think that's harmed the Biden administration and also other Democrats because of his actions. A lot of people are voting opposite for the opposite party. I see a lot of it's happening. And unfortunately, a lot of people are disgusted, because even with NATO, with all those countries, once the United States started dishing out all that money, billions of dollars, and all of a sudden now, not only this country, but other countries were affected by it, but other countries were not putting in the money because they saw it all coming from the United States. And now the United States is in a dire crisis. And a lot of people...
Yeah,
are
it is. It
a
is,
of,
and yeah. May I talk, please? What do you want to say?
Oh no, I was waiting for you.
Oh yeah, well, and then I think look at what Biden is doing now with bringing all these billions of dollars to the Ukraine, but the alternative are the Republicans, and then, well, who do you get? Trump? Well, I think Trump is not. You only have two parties to choose from, and that's a problem. You know, we have multiple parties, so our political parties are forced to negotiate. So they have to, you know, they have to negotiate with each other. They have to talk with each other, negotiate with each other. But you only have these two parties. And so if the Republicans win in 2 years, what's going to happen when the Santos wins? I think he tries to become a president, and I think, you know, the governor of Florida, and I think he has a good chance. He's, in my eyes, he's very dangerous.
Yeah.
Because he has the same extremist ideas as Trump, but he's well educated, but he's an extremist. So I don't know what's going to happen with your country, but you really have a lot of very deep and big issues, really.
DeSantis, as bad as he is, I think he might stand a good chance of overcoming Trump this, you know, in this next election.
I think, yeah.
Because
yeah.
People, like, as you say, people, they don't want Trump, but at the same time, they're really upset with the current administration. And so it's going to be a close, really close race all around. But I'm looking at, unless we have someone in the Democratic Party that's worthy of the votes, then I don't see it looking too good as it is. And that also goes for the penal system, because it's already been promised by the former president that he's going to pardon all of these people, these criminals that were, you know, involved in the insurrection and all these criminals that were on his side. And if that happens, the prisoners, state prisoners, first of all, they don't stand a chance, because it goes by government. And if there's all these governors in place that are against prison reform because they are benefiting as well from the mass incarceration, I can't imagine what's going to happen. And right now, we have people in politics right now that can do something, that can really make a change. But I'm waiting to see how that plays out.
I believe that Biden, when he was elected, that he promised to make to do something with prison reform. But I don't see it back yet.
No, and a lot of incarcerated individuals have mentioned that. They mentioned how Joe Biden and also Kamala Harris at one time were so against helping prisoners and the prison reform. And now during the campaign, they talked a lot about it. But a lot of the incarcerated individuals across the country are saying, you know, where is that promise that he made?
Yeah.
They don't hear any more about it.
No, that's so sad. He's all focused. They are all focused on this war, which is so far away from the United States. I mean, what do you citizens have? You know, you don't have any benefit of this war. I mean, it's something our concern. We are Europe. We are close. But what concern is it to the United States?
Exactly.
And that's a shame. I mean, it's so sad to see, you know, when so many incarcerated people have all these mental issues. They should be in a mental institution, as you also mentioned, you know, many times before. There should be a psychiatric, forensic psychiatric hospitals for people, you know, to become better. And what you say about parole, right now, what I see and what I hear is parole is, in fact, an extended form of incarceration. Sometimes there are prisoners who rather be in prison than on parole, because in prison it's clear, and on parole it's so much more complicated.
Yeah, it, you know, they get their hopes up only to have it trashed down because of the inequality. And that's what's so sad about parole. Again, so many people going up for parole, when they do get the opportunity, they don't have anything to show for what they've done, their progress in the prisons, because they've been denied and deprived throughout the years. And there's no one to look into this. And this is what's so frustrating. There's no one to look into the reason why these prisoners have not progressed while incarcerated, when in fact they can see and they can hear that person talking and know that that person has the intelligence. You know, and another thing is, which is so unfair, is that these legislative members, these people in the parole, all of them, they don't look into any of these issues. They don't look into the why these people are not in programs, why they're not in educational, why they're being moved around from blocks to block, you know, why they're doing all these things. And they're being separated when they connect with certain guards and they have good rapport, when they connect with other prisoners who are trying to, as themselves, serve their time without incident. They keep moving them around and around and putting them on blocks where there's problems and readjustment. They have prison surgeons, prison doctors, contracted medical providers that are permanently damaging prisoners with their treatment. Look at WellPath. WellPath is all over the internet. WellPath is a contracted provider with a lot of prisons in this country, and their founder, their president, is up for all kinds of charges of fraudulent activities. There's been over 1,000 lawsuits filed against WellPath. You know, these things are happening. Why is it not our legislative members, our government, why aren't they checking in, the Department of Justice? Why are they not checking in to these issues? They talk about criminal justice reform where many of them haven't even been in a prison to meet with the prisoners. How can you go for prison criminal justice or prison reform if you don't even know what the issues are because you don't want to meet with the prisoners?
It doesn't make sense. And I think what's the most painful thing is it's like, I call it a systemic indifference. They simply don't care. And that's so frustrating for families and you know, from the loved ones and their families. It's a systemic indifference. I describe this in my book as a form of violence. Because what you say, you know, they simply don't do anything. They talk a little bit and they use some interesting terms like prison reform and reform this and reform that. But in the end, nothing changes. So they are, in a way, indifferent. They don't care. And that's a systemic problem. And, you know, when I did my research for my book, I also found out there is a very famous survivor of Auschwitz, the Holocaust, and he describes in his book what happened. He's one of the best writers about it. And he also mentioned systemic indifference as a form of violence in the concentration camps. And it's in fact the same as what you described. They simply don't care, you know. And so people in prison are simply neglected or get sick or get harmed or whatever, simply because, you know, the people who should care, they are indifferent. They don't care. And that's so frustrating because it's, you can't grasp it. You know, they don't make mistakes. They simply do nothing. They don't do anything. Mass incarceration could have been transformed years ago, decades ago. We know all the problems, but it's like nobody cares. They don't care. The people in prisons are the disposals, you know. So they don't get a second chance. They can rot away in the system, and they don't care. Simply, they are disposed. It's waste. That's how far I go. And that's why, that's what the painful thing, because that's what I mean with this suspension of human values, which is going on in the prisons every day and every night. And that's crossing a divine line, because we are created, you know. Life is created. Life is divine to me, is sacred. And when you dispose it, well, that's evil.
Yeah. You know, when the incarcerated reach out to the governor's office, and I don't know what it's like in other states, but I know whenever prisoners, incarcerated individuals have written to the governor's office about the abuses or the deprivations, civil rights violations, all these things that they're being deprived of, and they write to the governor's office because they have no other way to get help. And the governor's office sends it right back, sends the letters right back to the very people the incarcerated individuals are writing about, which only makes it worse for these individuals. So that's another problem I have with our governors, and I'm sure it's happening in other states. And I network with advocates around the country. And advocates I network around the country, they talk about the same problems in their state, but every state is operated differently. And when they first started this coalition in Massachusetts to abolish life without parole, the sentencing project, I was on a coalition. And unfortunately, I ended up leaving the coalition because I was trying to find a lawyer that would represent, that would help, you know, in a situation that I had in our organization. There were several lawyers from the same firm that were in this coalition, several lawyers. But yet when we contacted these people, they were saying they didn't have the lawyers, they didn't have the manpower or the funding to help. And yet they're helping prisoners who are connected with others that can benefit them, that can get them the notoriety that they need and the media. And this bothers me because these people are preventing these prisoners from getting the help they need, unless these prisoners have connections to some influential people that can help these organizations with lawyers. They don't get acknowledged. And the Old Colony Correctional Center, the Lifers Group, the chairman and the vice chairman sent a letter out to all the politicians and to a lot of places telling them about this particular prisoner legal services, you know, that for years has been alleging to help and not doing anything. We have more than just that one out there. I look at American Civil Liberties Union. I look at NAACP. I look at a lot of these organizations that have not been there for these individuals that are incarcerated and seeking help. And one of the things that these individuals in prison, many of them get diagnosed with antisocial behavior when they're being evaluated, when in fact many of them have post-traumatic stress syndrome. They talk about those that are in the military coming out that are incarcerated that have post-traumatic PTSD, but they don't realize there's a lot of individuals incarcerated who have had traumatic backgrounds as children, as adults, as adolescents, that have this post-traumatic stress syndrome. But by labeling them antisocial, it makes the public feel that these people are more dangerous than they are. And yeah, I want to say, Marianne, we have 7 minutes. So before we get too far down in time, can you please let the audience know how they can connect with you, any information you want, and your website, your email address or whatever? Can you just let the audience know?
Yes, my website is www.deeperjustice.com, and you can also read the text that I wrote on the website about the book and the film. You can also read them in English, so I translated them also in English. I'm on LinkedIn with my own name, Miriam Jacobs. I'm also on Facebook, and I have a Deeper Justice page on Facebook, and I am on Instagram. Well, I will keep you informed when my book will be translated in English. I hope I can have my conversation about that with my publisher in January or something. And the film is on Amazon Prime. So then you have to go to Amazon Prime. The first month, you'll have to pay for it, but the first month you can have Amazon Prime for free. After a month, you have to pay, but in the first month, you can have it for free, and so you can watch the film without having to pay. And that's on Amazon Prime.
Okay, and many do have it. Will it also be
And what I would like to add is not information, but it's more like to everybody who listens, try for yourself to think about what do human values mean for you? What does it mean for yourself, and how important are human values for you, and what do you see in your environment when you go to the grocery store, or you are in your car, or at your work? What do you see concerning human values around you? Become aware of what it means, and decency is just as important as breathing air. Without decency, we cannot live, and this kind of decency has been taken away from the incarcerated individuals who are just as human as we all are. That's what I wanted to say.
I want to thank you for that too, because it's so true. And a lot of times they wonder why so many riots, so many hunger strikes. When people can't get help from those who are influential, those who can make a difference, when they can't get help from these people, that's when they have to reach out, and they have to reach out to other inmates across the country. They have to come up with these hunger strikes, and frustration brings about rioting. So these are the very important issues that need to be addressed. Again, and I'm hoping our legislative members will focus on some of these issues and try to do something about it. So many individuals incarcerated are being deprived of doing anything in prison. So that means that if the time comes when they can be released by parole, they will not be released because they have nothing to show for it. This is a major issue, especially with these coalitions now that are coming together to abolish life without parole and life sentences. So unless these people can get the help that they need to get rehabilitated, they won't stand a chance. I want the audience to know about you, Mariam. You can find Mariam Jacobs on the internet just by typing in Mariam Jacobs, psychosocial therapist, or you can, you know, type in Mariam Jacobs, psychosocial therapist, Deeper Justice, and look her up, because there's so much that she has been doing throughout these years for a young person. There is so much that she has been doing, and that she has been such a professional and such an experienced psychosocial therapist from the Netherlands. So I hope you will look her up. I hope you will look at the film Death Row Angels, and that you will be looking for her book when it does come out. Again, Mariam, what is the name of the book?
Suspended Values in Concentration Camp and the United States Prison System.
And this is all about this country, the United States of America, in comparison to others. So please look for these films and these books, and look for more, because Mariam, I'm sure you're going to be moving forward with writing more books as well. And you have done a major thing in getting familiar with the penal system in the United States, as well as in your country and others. So I thank you for being on with us. And I look forward to you being back on in a few weeks, maybe another month or so, just to keep us updated on everything that's going on.
I will certainly do that.
According to your schedule, we will be in touch. And according to your schedule, you just let me know when you would be available again, because you are one of the best guests that I've had on the show, and I want to have you on again.
Thank you, Leona.
An audience, I want you to know that tomorrow, which will be December 1st at 12 o'clock Eastern Time, I will be interviewing Brian Winters, who was a legislative member in Vermont, and he is now no longer a politician, but he founded an American Union, which will advocate and which will support any party that is for the core cause. And one of the causes is mass incarceration as well. So join us tomorrow at 9 to hear Brian Winters from Vermont, a state that has not taken away the voting rights of their prisoners at all, as well as Maine. So please join us tomorrow to hear Brian Winters. And Mariam Jacobs will be back on with us, I'm hoping within the next couple of weeks, but we will let you know about that in the next week or so. Mariam, again, thank you. I'm looking forward to reading that book once it's translated. And I thank you for all the good that you have done. I thank you for all the information that you have shared. And I thank you for bringing awareness of the comparison between prisons in Europe and prisons in the United States. Thank you so much for being on.
Thank you too, Leona. Have very good luck tomorrow with another interesting radio show.
I would love to have you on tomorrow. If you get a chance, let me know. I will send you an invitation.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Leona.
Audience, we are now going to be closing, and I'm going to be sending you an invitation, Mary. Thank you so much.
Thank you too, Leona.